Good day and welcome to our podcast in support of Green Industry Pros, article number 10 on management, and specifically management as a discipline. This is William Eastman. I'm going to be your host for the next few minutes. I am the managing partner for GrowthWorks Media, an intellectual property company focused on small business growth. And I'm also a senior consultant with the Green Mark Corporation, and you have read a number of our articles over the last 18 months in Green Industry Pros magazine. Now, this is in support of the article that's going to be up this coming month, I believe in June, July. And the purpose behind this was, one, to set the context, and number two, to provide some meat on the bones of the article. So a few things we're going to talk about that are not in the article, and that is the issue of management discipline and what are really the five disciplines that will make any manager successful in the business. So I'm going to take this from big to small. But I want to start with a basic premise, and that is how the owner of the business manages, establishes the prototype of how management occurs in the business. So an example is that one of the things that our business does, GrowthWorks and Greenmark, both companies, we do business turnarounds. And I happened to be in a position where I was made number two, executive vice president of the company, and we made cabinets. And so one of the first things I did was just observe how the business is being managed. I went to the floor, watched meetings, etc. And one of the things I quickly established is that there is no discipline of management, that the owner basically didn't really interact with people, stayed in his office, except if there was a crisis, then came out and did the normal owner routine of yelling and screaming. Well, the person who was responsible for running the manufacturing process did exactly the same thing. And so you had this cascading approach. Here I am, the number two guy in the company, on the floor at 6 in the morning when the incoming shift comes in, and there's nobody there to give them a pep rally. There's nobody there to talk them through what today's production is going to be. Nobody's there to talk them through what's going to happen that week and the priorities. And so basically, we wondered why we weren't making any money. And it was a collection of not making parts fast enough, as well as producing them at bad quality. And so how you as the owner establish your management approach, and that's who I'm talking to predominantly here, will establish how everybody else does it. So let me give you the five disciplines for you to consider. Discipline number one is that the first role of management is to bring order out of chaos, because that is where most small businesses are. As you look and you grow the company, at some point as the owner, where you were is you were doing the work and you were basically a glorified technician. And maybe you were in a supervisory role, but at some point there was more work than you could handle nor anybody else. And so the day became a daily fire drill of, we've got all these crises, which ones do we deal with first? And so what the role of management is to take a look at this and say, I've got to get this organized. I've got to get this under some sort of control, because employees don't function well in chaos. Customers don't have great experiences in chaos. And certainly your bank statement doesn't look good during chaos. So that is the number one role in business, is I've got to organize this in a way that the day is much more predictable and we have methods for dealing with the fire drills. You go to a fire department, and what do? They constantly practice for the fire, knowing it's going to come up, but they don't know when. I spent time in the Coast Guard, and what do? We spent time getting ready to get underway to pick up somebody whose boat was sinking. We didn't know when the boat was going to sink, but when it happened, we were practiced. We knew what we were doing. So typically what happens here, this is when you map your processes, which we talked about in earlier shows. This is also where you write standard operating procedures. You have position descriptions. That's how you bring order out of the chaos. Number two, and that is removing results obstacles. Now, let me talk about what this looks like in a conversation with an individual to make my point. My number one job on the floor was to walk up to my supervisors and say, what obstacles are preventing you from doing quality work today? Or what obstacles are preventing you from meeting budget today? Or what obstacles are preventing you from meeting your production quotas? In other words, my job as a manager, my second discipline, is to find out from my people what obstacles are preventing them from doing the job correctly and remove them. Because these obstacles are outside of the individual. And if you're expecting, or in most cases what we don't expect, we demand. If you demand high quality performance and people have all these obstacles in the way, I can tell you two things. Number one, I don't care how much you demand it, you're not going to get it. And number two, you're going to alienate the workforce because, hell, they know this. So they're like going, why is he beating me up? I didn't do this. And so removing obstacles, the performance, or I'll call results obstacles, is my number two job of my discipline. Okay, now this gets us into the article because I set the groundwork here. The third discipline here is maximizing the use of resources, and that's why our emphasis was on scheduling. Because I can tell you right now is that 80% of the gross margin in any business comes from its scheduling. Okay, so think about that for a second. 80% of your gross margin comes from scheduling. So what do I have to do? I have to have the ability to schedule work by use of resources, which is equipment, it's people, it's raw materials, it's inventory, etc. When I look at a particular day, how do I jam in all of the right elements to get as much done in that day as I possibly can while keeping the burden on individuals basically balanced? And what I mean by that is I don't want to make 100 on Monday, 60 on Tuesday, 70 on Wednesday. Say that the average number is 85 for the week. I want to make 85 a day, even if that doesn't quite match the demand per day. Why? Because I want to put people under the even strain. That is critical for me in terms of scheduling. Management discipline number four is meeting budget. And what this is work efficiency. And what I mean by meeting budget and work efficiency is that one of the first things I did when I did the turnaround is I handed budgets to all the supervisors and said, here are the raw materials you have today. Here's the labor hours that you have. Here are the units that need to be produced. Your job is to come in budget or below it. And what we were now looking at is the efficiency of each one of the individual machines or each one of the processes. In our particular case, we had three machines being managed by a supervisor, and then we had a basically manual assembly area being managed by a supervisor. So we had the ability to measure four different pieces to say there's a budget for each one of those. And then management discipline number five is the elimination of waste. Or another way of saying it, you cannot inspect quality into anything. Quality is built in to the products and services that we provide. So how do I get my employees done? Because if I look at organizational hierarchy, scheduling is a role of management. Now, I'm going back and forth between manager and management. And so management is a function. Manager is a person. But what I'm looking to do here is that maximizing the use of resources is typically a management job. Meeting budget is typically a supervisor job, but they're managing that process. And then eliminating waste is basically the job of the individual employees. Now, if I understand that, where I go next in this issue of creating managers makes sense. Because when I look at managers, if these are the five disciplines that they need to exhibit to be successful, then I need to take a look at two parts of them. I need to take a look at what skill sets they need to have, and I need to take a look at what personal characteristics they need to be successful. Because a lot of times, good managers don't make good entrepreneurs. I definitely know for certain is good entrepreneurs don't make good managers. Because entrepreneurs like everything kind of helter-skelter. They like to shoot from the hip. It kind of gives them a buzz, which is fun when you're small, when you get bigger, and you're in the company trying to get stuff done. Not so much fun. So here are the three skill sets in the article. Number one is technical skills. Number two is people skills, and number three is conceptual skills. Now, technical skills are specific to whatever the job is. In other words, if I'm in the landscape business and I'm looking at design build, then there are probably four or five skill sets. One of the skill sets would be the operation of heavy equipment. Another skill set would be being a mason. Another skill set would be working with concrete. Another skill set would be maybe electrician in terms of I've got to wire stuff up. And so I want to take a look at each one of those technical skills that are required for that job. The next set of skills that are required are people skills, and that is my ability to get people to work together collaboratively to get a job done. Now, if I've got people, even if I have jobs where I have just one individual here and one individual there, I still got the issue of the interaction between myself and them. So people skills are critical for managers. And in conceptual skills is my ability to see the bigger picture, my ability to understand the impact of jobs being done correctly or incorrectly. It's my ability to understand perhaps the whole process of how we sell and what expectations were created. So those are the three skill sets. Now, if I look at frontline employees, what's the mix? Frontline employees, it's almost entirely technical skills. I would say probably 90% of the skills that I need with a landscape technician, whether it's in maintenance or in design build or in turf or in snow, is can they do the specific thing they need to, that I've hired them to do? And then probably the remaining 10%, probably 8 of that is going to be spent on people skills because I need them to at least be somewhat able to get along with others. And as far as conceptual skills, if they understand what's going on in the bigger picture, that's wonderful, but I don't really need it because I'm managing that. Now, if I go up a level and say, all right, now what I want to do is I want to hire a first-line supervisor, the skill set changes a little bit. And so what do I need to look for here? Well, first of all, you know that you can't put somebody in a supervisory role that's incompetent technically for the job because that will take you nowhere. On the other hand, is the mistake that we make is that we hire the best one. We say, okay, of the four people here, clearly my best technician is Bill, and I'm going to hire Bill. But the problem is that Bill may have horrible people skills, and I have another person that's working down there, and Steven is not as good as Bill, does not turn out as much work, high quality, but Steven's work is good, and he gets along with everybody, and everybody seems to like working with him. In this scenario, Steven may make a better choice. Now, I'm not basing this on liking, because I don't think liking is really the issue here. The issue is that you can you get people to do things they don't want to do and not be annoyed about it? And somebody who has the people skills to be liked probably has the people skills to sell those type of jobs. So if I look at a first-line supervisor, technical skills are still important, but it's gone from 90 to maybe 50. And that of the remaining 50%, probably 40 of that is people skills, and the remaining 10% is technical, because now I definitely need them to begin to understand how the company is making money, because if they're not bringing jobs in on budget, we're not making any dollars. And that is critical to my business. Now, if I look at bringing somebody up to the management level, let's take a look at how those skills change again. And that is managers, you know, who are managing supervision, you can probably back the technical skills around 30%. That leaves you 70. You can split that 70%, 35-35 between human and conceptual, because what the manager still needs some technical ability. And I can tell you right now is that if you go another level or two levels up in management, or I go back to my scenario when I was working in a manufacturing setting, I was the second level of management. And you know what I knew about making cabinets? Nothing. And after 8 months, you know what I know about making cabinets? Next to nothing. Because at that level of management, I don't need any real technical skills. I need people skills and conceptual skills because I have people working for me who know what they're doing. That first level of management, you'd say about 30% of the job is technical skills because their supervisor is going to be reporting to them. They're going to be bringing in obstacles. They've got to have the ability to go, yeah, we'll do this, do that. But the real focus is going to be on the people skills, and it's going to be on conceptual skills. If a manager doesn't get how we're making money and how we're growing the business, then they shouldn't be there. Now, here's the important point before I move on to the next set of issues, and that's this, and that is so many times we promote people for the past. We look at them and we say, for the job that they're currently doing, we're going to promote them. The best person in the current job, promote them for the future job. And the reality is we're promoting people for the past. And a lot of times those past positions don't fit. If you look at any organization, where are the areas of incompetence? One area of incompetence is taking technicians and making them supervisors. The next one is supervisors making the jump to manager. Okay, now most organizations, the big companies, have a wide range of managerial levels, probably 3 or 4 or 5, until you get to the executive level. And here's the next level of incompetence, because how much technical skills do you need to be the executive? Very little. People skills, believe it or not, very little. Where are most of the skill sets? It's conceptual, because what is your job? Your job is to think about where the business needs to be in 5 years, given what you can predict or estimate is going to occur. That is definitely a conceptual skill. So those are the levels of incompetence that people go through. Now, Let's talk about personal attributes. So here's those are the skill sets. Now let me hit you up with personal attributes. There are two that I think stand out over anything else. Number one is nobody's going to be successful in management if they can't manage themselves. If they cannot manage their calendar, if they can't manage their day, they can't manage anything else. If their life is helter-skelter, they can't manage a group of people or a department or a truck. You got to get them out of that role, because what they're doing with themselves, and that was kind of my opening statement with business owners, set the tone for what management as a discipline looks like in a firm, is that I want people who understand how to manage their own time. And we did an article on this not too long back, so you can take a look at some of the articles in Green Industry Pro magazine and see it there. The other one is working under pressure, which is not a topic that we've talked about before. And what's critical about this is that if you look at the work of anybody from first-line supervisor through the ranks of middle management, and what can you basically say? And that is that you're doing a great deal of work at an unrelenting pace, and that the work has high variety. You could be working on X, you know, right now, and next thing you know, you're popping up with Y, and they have nothing to do with each other. Like you're working on, we've got an equipment breakdown over here, so I'm trying to figure out how we're going to replace that piece of equipment. I'm working with a supplier, maybe trying to get a lease. And then over here, I've got a sexual harassment suit. And my day could be filled up with kind of bouncing around like a ping pong ball between those. Also, it's highly fragmented. I typically never have more than 20 or 30 minutes at one time on any topic before I move on to the next one. And so I got this particular day that I may do 50 things in a day and never have more than 10 or 15 minutes to work on it. And a lot of those items have nothing to do with each other except that they're inside the business. So that is the nature of, if you are anywhere from a first-line supervisor to a middle manager in any organization, and what that requires is that you have the ability to work under pressure. And what does work under pressure mean? Is that you control self-management, you control what can be controlled, control the controllable, and then for the remainder of it is that you understand that this is not under your control and you keep your composure. You don't let it get you down, you don't let you bum you out, it doesn't let you don't let it make you fly off the handle. In other words, what you got to do is keep an even keel, because I go back to management discipline number one, and that is you got to bring the order out of chaos. If what you do creates chaos, then the organization is sunk. One of the places that I worked many years ago, I managed a number of consulting projects around the United States, and at the time we were working mostly in the automotive industry with America's largest manufacturer and their tier one suppliers. And I would just constantly say to my project managers who are working in individual plants, never get worried unless I look worried. In other words, with all that's going on and everything that's weird, and we had plenty of weird stuff because we were always right at that edge between management and labor. So we were always the union and management were constantly going at it, and we were kind of in the middle of all that. I just told my people is that if I don't look worried, don't get worried. And that was my way of bringing order out of the chaos that we were in, because a lot of it we did not control. How do I make this work for me? So in the last part of the article, we talked about a training schedule. So here's the way I would go about this, because what I want to do is I want to grow my own managers. I don't want to hire off the street unless I have no choice. And even in large corporations, that's kind of generally the rule, is that the only time they go outside is either they absolutely do not have any qualified candidates, or there's a particular technology for which they don't have the expertise and it's going to take too long to develop it. So most companies want to bring at least 75% of their promotions, whether that's from technician, supervisor, manager, executive, they want to do that internally. So here's a recommendation I have, and we've done this with a number of clients, and is at the technician level. Notice I'm not calling them laborers, because that's an insult. And if you're trying to talk to people about landscaping being a profession as opposed to just trading time for money, then I need to perhaps make the job sound more professional. So I would create two levels of technician, Tech 1, Tech 2. Tech 2 is the entry point. And when you're a Tech 2, what do? You're trained on a single technical skill. That's it. Single technical skill. You know, so if that's running a cement mixer, if that is using a shovel, if that's a lawnmower, if that's a sprayer, I mean, you pick it. What I want to do is with T1s or T2s is I want to take them single skill at a time and train them. So if, let's say there's five skills in maintenance, five skill areas in maintenance, I want to make sure that my T2s go through each one of those in that team so that they understand. They understand mowing, pruning, mulching, edging, cleaning up. In other words, I want to put them in each one of those jobs. Once they master one of them, I want to put them in all the jobs together. And what am I going to do when they've done all that? I'm going to promote them to T1s. And so that's going to be a increase in pay and a little change of venue. And so at one landscape company, what we did is that that person, when they became a technician level one or T1, once a week, they went on a different crew. So I took a guy from landscape maintenance and put him in a design build team for a day. Now, over there, he was just a laborer. But what happened is he then began to pick up the skills of those other jobs. And once a week, he would shift over, just like once a week, we would take somebody from design build and we would put them in maintenance. And so the idea behind this is we begin to cross-train people. We're paying them a little bit more money. We're giving them a better sense of the business. And by the way, what you've just done is create a career path. So if you said to somebody, look, you come here, you got a great chance to be in a management job someday, and we have a process for how to train you to do that. And so what the T1 is, you want to cross-train them in all the other areas of the business so they understand everything that you're doing. Now what you have is, let's move to supervisor level. You do the same thing with supervisors. You have a supervisor one and two. Now, the way we did it is we had crew leader and assistant crew leader. Assistant crew leader were T1s that we promoted up, and what we now gave them is we put them in some leadership positions under the tutelage of the crew leader, where they began to manage the flow of work and they began to manage people. And so, as we talked earlier, I would not pick my best technician necessarily for the assistant job. I would pick a good technician, but somebody who had great people skills. And what their job was, in this particular case, it was maintenance, is to sit in the truck while the crew leader drives and ask questions about running the business. And they would get trained when they were doing side-by-sides like that. And so that later on, what you have is somebody would be on the job site and the crew leader would basically allow them to run the job site, giving them more and more responsibility until they could run jobs on their own. And again, what's the job here? Bring it in under budget. We got an inventory, we got a material list, we got a labor list, and so you've got to bring it in. Once they get to the crew leader, the foreman, the supervisor, you pick the title. Now what I have is my management candidates. And just like when I was promoting technicians to put them in the assistant job, I was looking for people not so much on the technical side, but on the people side. Now when I have managers, what I want to look for is not so much on technical or on human skills or people skills. I'm now looking at people who are pretty smart conceptually and understand how the business operates, because those are the people I want in a management position. And so who runs all the operations? Who runs all design build? You have to have a manager to run. If you're running four or five design build projects, somebody's got to run them, because those managers, one person is not going to be able to manage the details and be on site. You need a foreman or a crew leader on site to manage that. They've got to report to a manager, just like on maintenance. If you've got 30 contracts or 40 commercial contracts on maintenance, or how about you've got four or five distribution centers on snow, and so you've got to manage all that. So you got a manager in that role. What you want is somebody who understands the business much better, and what their job is going to be is basically making the scheduling work. So that's where we are. Hopefully you found this insightful. There's far more here that I possibly can do in this short, whether it's in an article or in podcasts. So the smart move would be, if you want to talk about this further, two ways you can do that. Number one is you can hit me up. That's Bill Eastman. And you can call me at 833-RU-GREEN. 833-RU-GREEN is our toll-free number. Or you can write to me through our Gmail account at greenmarkcoaching@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. If you've got any questions, you know how to get a hold of us. We'd love to help you. Take care and have a great day.